Welcome to the Weekend Market Report. I'm Michelle Rourke with Jerry Gahlke, president of the Gahlke Group. For the week, May corn was 1.25 cents higher. December corn lost a half cent. May soybeans dropped 11 cents. November soybeans down 8.5. May soybean meal was up $11.30 per short ton. May soybean oil fell 300 points, while May Chicago wheat was 11.25 cents lower. May Kansas City wheat was up 7.5 cents. May Minneapolis wheat lost 5.25 cents. December cotton was down 253 points, and June Dow futures lost 963 points. Jerry, it was another interesting week in the markets with increased volatility in both the commodity and stock indices. And let's talk about where some of that volatility is coming from, including maybe a little bit of hangover from the WASD report. We didn't see much of an adjustment in terms of corn ending stocks, and as well, USDA punted on South American production numbers. So when are they going to rectify that?
Well, you would think, I thought they'd do something today, this week, on the WASD report, and they did increase ethanol. They can do more because we're exceeding the amount of corn we're using to produce the ethanol is ahead of what is needed by USDA to meet their goal. So they're going to have to raise their goal as far as how many bushels we're going to grind somewhere down the road. But they did give us a benefit of that, and in feed and residual, and so we got part of it. We're going to be thankful for that, but they still left, like you just mentioned, they left that void in there, and they got worse, or got wider, I guess, between what USDA says they think is in South America, Argentina and Brazil, both corn and soybeans, I guess now it's encompassing both, versus what the official numbers out of the countries are. And of course, there is a study out there that says that if you went back 10 years, I think it is, or whatever, and you used CONAB's numbers, we'll say, versus USDA, we would have had 1 billion bushels less soybeans produced in those 10 years and then what was actually there. So I don't know, foreign countries, I don't know how they operate or how what their protocol is there, but there is that wide divergence. And some people that are actually going there that are boots on the ground are saying, yeah, it's bad. And now we got a problem in Argentina with the moth. The moth thing probably wasn't on USDA's radar, but at some point in time, we're gonna find out either I'm wrong or other people that are commenting on it now too are wrong, and USDA was right, or USDA has to bite the bullet somehow and say, yeah, the crop turned out not to be as good as we first thought. And I'll place the caveat on that because I met with WASD a number of years ago. I knew some of the people personally there, and I was in Washington a number of times and talked to him, and he will say, Jerry, we deal in facts. You can deal with innuendo and speculation. That's your job. Be our guest. But we only report the facts as we see them. They do not have a closing market or a year-end model for Brazil or Argentina and what they actually produce. So I think they're scared to make a prediction, in which they won't make a prediction. They want hard evidence. So, like again, they said, Jerry, that's guys like you, and that's your job, not ours. And we'll present the facts, you do with them what you want. So here lies the conversation, and that's what trading is all about. But if they happen to be, if I'm right and they're wrong, and then their answer has to be, well, what did it cost the American farmer, and me as well probably, because the low level of prices to price discovery wouldn't have had to be this low. We had it the low in like in the end of February. Wouldn't have had to have been that low if someone is saying it was 1.9 billion carry out and 230 million bushels of corn or beans, not 350 and 2.5 billion or something. So you get the point. It's supply and demand. And when there's too much supply, right or wrong, the market reacts to that. And it would be, I don't know how to put it any other way, but it'll be hell to pay if it turns out that they're wrong and they get their back up against the wall. But I'm sure there's ways of blaming it onto something, and that's again, you know, saying, you know, we don't speculate, so we have to deal with that. And but the bottom line is, unfortunately, is that the market will trade the USDA numbers, because when it's all said and done, people that are in the business, the research business, they use those numbers and change their even Sparks was very good at the number in years ago. When the USDA came up with the number, they used their number. They didn't speculate on a new number until it was changed again by USDA. So it really makes it difficult for a lot of people like myself to try to perform an outlook. And then if you're right, you never see the light of day of it. And in the meantime, you fight a false number, if indeed it is false. But I think it'll come out gradually. And the unfortunate part is that they can reconcile a lot of things out into September, even. At the end of September, they kind of rechange things. And, yep, we raised the yield or lowered the yield a bushel an acre. Oh, by that time, it's too late. We've suffered the consequences or the lack of benefits of, and we've gone into a new crop that carried the weight of that until we find out something different. So I don't have an answer for it, for the problem, but we've seen it before, and they have said that NASA said we're going to try to do a better job. So we'll see. I don't know, there probably isn't a better system than what we have of reporting at the USDA than anywhere in the world. I doubt that Argentina or Brazil or Russia or anybody else is as good as we are at it. So
Yeah.
we have to wait and see.
Jerry, we also saw a big correction again this week in the stock market. We talked about this last week, but again, let's go over some of the things that are maybe starting to force that issue.
Yeah, I would say if the listeners would look back on the, they probably have their top producer column by now, and it's in the spring issue, but it's on the internet. And what we track is for a long time, for the last 15, 20 years, just as an indicator that doesn't necessarily predict where something's going to go exactly, but it says when things are out of whack. And that's what I was trying to outline there, that the housing market was going up strong. A lot of things, stock market was going up, NASDAQ especially, for expecting two or three or four cuts in the interest rates, and that was going to soothe everything. And so I'm going to be on board now before that happens. And of course, the commodities were going downhill. We got a wide discrepancy there where the market heals itself, not like South America and Brazil and the United States, a discrepancy in the yields and production, but the market tends to heal itself. And we saw that coming really back in the middle of February. I've seen it happen before, 2 or 3 years ago, and it has a lot of research that we do has a lot to do with money flow. And there's an old saying is that if you hear something on CNBC or read it in the Wall Street Journal, it's either too old or too late, or it's old news. And a lot of the analysts in the business don't understand that the stock market, S&P, NASDAQ, and Dow Jones, they're futures markets, just like our commodities are, and they're looking to the future and not to the past. And that's what we saw coming, was that this isn't going to last forever. And there's a self we had sell signals that what we use in proprietary stuff we use in-house, and acted accordingly. Now in the last and we did the same thing in the cattle, in the feeder cattle, back in the middle of February. It said there's an imminent collapse coming. And it just hung on and hung on and hung on. And usually the longer it takes, the worse the problem is. And then we saw the stock markets turn. We had three major key reversals, daily key reversals down. And you have a market that's been going up, and every pullback, people were buying it. Algorithms, a lot of computer generated stuff, down 150 points, let's own a little bit more. And it rallied back up, made new highs for the last, 4 or 5 months. Anybody that sold that market was wrong until. And of course, now once that algorithm trading says buy a break, and you get a bigger break and you get stopped out, and then you buy again and you get a bigger break, suddenly you turn tail and you say, whoa, we're only down 5 or 6% for off the top. We could go down 30 or 40% off the top, or a 10% correction. Then they turn tail and go the other way.
So, if money is coming out of the equity sector, will it go into the commodity sector or specifically the grain market? What does it mean for that market?
Similarly, with the grain markets, you've been killing these markets, and all the speculators or the farmers selling, grains be bought to be or grown to be sold. So the weight on the market due to the headwinds we had totally wiped out all the gains in wheat and corn that we made due to Russia or whatever the Ukraine situation, whatever you want to call it, the drought. We lost all that. Anybody that sold any kind of a rally was right until we turn around. And then I listen for people in the business saying, well, sell the first 10 cent move in the market because, boy, we got a lot of grain coming. We're going to grow another big crop. Well, that's a futures decision to make that. And you're predicting something that we haven't seen yet. And it's a futures market. So suddenly things turn around and maybe we get money out of the stock market into commodities. I don't know. But now we got a threat of a war with Iran, with Israel. Don't think it's going to happen. But that's a psychology that says, whoa, I wasn't around in World War II, so I don't know how bad it really got. But do you want to own something that's going to be in short supply because Jerry doesn't have the fuel to do his farming or whatever? Who knows how people think out there that speculate. So the guy that's been selling the grain, the algorithm guy, he's been right. All of a sudden, when he starts to be wrong, he's going to say, no, I was wrong in the grain. I was wrong in the stock market. I'm going the other way. And then that's why we need those guys in the market. I always say there's two harvests for me for years has been harvesting my crop that I grow and harvesting the speculator who doesn't know beans from beans, so to speak. And so that's what we're seeing. And we saw that it was coming. You know, I own peanuts and stocks, equities, having sold out most of them. And what I didn't have sold, I hedged off in buying puts or just selling the NASDAQ but the stock market, Dow Jones or the S&P. So there's somewhere, you know, it's kind of like weather. You get extreme one year and you get extreme the other. And then all of a sudden you hear somebody, well, the average temperature for the United States this year was such and such. Well, things go to an equilibrium. So do when you get out of whack, things gravitate towards the middle. You just got to be able to have an outlook. And especially in farming, you just can't get pessimistic when prices are too low, and you can't get optimistic when nobody else can buy them and use them for anything. So how this all turns out could be a long summer.
And how much farther do you think the stock market will correct?
I think it was Merrill Oster at one time who started Pro Farmer years ago, coined the phrase, and that's where I learned it from him. And that's that at any time you have a move higher, 50% of the time you're going to get a 50% correction. 60% of the time you're going to get a third correction, a 38%. And a third of the time you're going to get a two-thirds correction. And then, of course, there's always a chance, like we saw in corn and wheat, where you lose it all. You go back to, you use that term, reset again. So I looked at the Dow Jones, and my risk on the downside at any time in the last 2 weeks was a correction of about 2,000 to 2,500 points, maybe 3,000 points or more. Now, that's only a 10% correction. That's peanuts in the whole scheme of things. But that's big, you know, when you got 10% of 30 some thousand, that's a whole lot different than 10% of 900 when it was back in the 70s. So, you know, and it's kind of like, well, you're only going to get a 10% correction in the price of land, perhaps. Well, 10% of $1,600 an acre. That's a bunch. It makes banks worry. So as an example, so I look for it. There's probably at least another 1500 points down. But this is not going to be easy because there's so many bulls out there in the market who are looking for things that really happen. You're going to lower interest rates. Pretty soon you're going to hear them say, well, why are they lowering interest rates? Things must be bad. There must be going to be a recession coming. So I'm getting out. So you want them to lower interest rates, but you don't want them to lower interest rates for the obvious reason that hurts your equity. And again, you feel real good when the equity on your homes. I spend time in California. High-priced homes out there are up about 50% in the last 2 years. There's no lack of money to buy a million-dollar house. But you can't eat that equity. You can't take that equity and go out and spend 25 or 30% more to eat out. You gotta generate cash to do that. And we haven't seen that happen yet. So the guy middle class and the guy that's works for a living, I guess you'd say, he's hurting. And if he's got equity in the stock market, he may say, you know, I got to use some of that to eat with, but I that's just kind of hearsay, but you get the point. Pretty soon you generate cash somehow. Right now they're going for their credit cards and they're borrowing money basically in credit cards or whatever, financing a car for 7 years instead of 5 or 9 years or whatever, to keep their standard of living that they were used to back when interest rates were zero and inflation wasn't very high. And that's I read the book on that in the last chapter, and it doesn't end well. So makes me very, I'm probably conservative already. Makes me very conservative now.
Thanks for joining us. For more information, you can contact Jerry at info@gulkygroup.com. That's Jerry Gulke, president of the Gulke Group. I'm Michelle Rook with the Weekend Market Report.